KPCA LP, Petaluma, California. You're listening to KPCA LP, Petaluma, California, 103.3. We're also online, kpca.fm.
R&B, punk, surf.
And I'm here today on Inside Petaluma. I'm filling in for Cindy Thomas, our normal host. She couldn't be here today. She's on a well-deserved vacation. So I'm here with co-host Janice Hader Thompson.
Good to see you, Jason.
Good to see you, Janice. Thanks for joining us. And we have two special guests here with us today. We have Joan Cooper.
Good morning.
Friends of Schoenberger Park. And we have former council member and founder of the River Council, David Keller.
Hey, good morning.
Today we're going to talk about big subject for Petaluma, Dutra. And so I'm going to start by just letting our guests give us a little bit of background on the Dutra project and the struggle that Petaluma's been involved with to oppose that project, and why, and kind of where the project is at this moment. And before we do that, I think Janice wanted to say something briefly.
I just want to briefly talk about what's happening with the Supreme Court between Christine Blasey Ford and Brent Kavanaugh, and it made me kind of tearful this morning thinking of Lulabelle Sites and how the valedictorian had to fight to be valedictorian and how they cut the mic. And it was all about a sexual encounter that happened at the school. She was raped by a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And the school made her sit close to him during the commencement ceremony. And there's such a lack of sensitivity with that. And it just, I called her this morning and just told her I've been thinking about her all day yesterday, and I'm thinking about her today, and she's down at Stanford. I'm really proud of her. And as a mother of three daughters, I am heartbroken. I know there's a lot of women and men that are fearful of what's going to happen if Brett Kavanaugh ends up being on the Supreme Court. And it's just a very emotional day for a lot of people in this country. And I just thank you for letting me share that.
Absolutely. And I think I share those sentiments. I think probably our guests and most people in our area do.
Yeah.
So thank you for that, Janice. So we have Joan Cooper and David Keller, who wants to start with giving us a little overview of what's been going on with Dutra.
Okay. This is Joan, and I guess I'll start. You know, with these major national issues on our minds, we can't forget that fighting our local battles are one place we can really make a difference. And this battle of the community to preserve and protect Schoenberger Park, our most popular city park on the banks of the Petaluma River, from Dutra Materials, a privately held company that wishes to build an asphalt factory only 150 feet from the walking path of Schoenberger Park. Now, this company has been opposed by, I would say, over 95% of the community, plus the unanimous city council that was sitting when this fight really got heated in 2008. That's when I got involved and found out that the county, the Board of Supervisors that had jurisdiction over this particular piece of land and approving this project, they were about to vote yes. And I was like, what the hell? Talked to David Keller and said, how is this going forward? And basically he said that although the environmental organizations had all written letters opposing it, that they had gotten no traction and it was going forward. So that's when we went into action and decided to inform the populace of what was going to happen to their beloved park. Now, this park is recorded to have over 150,000 visitors per year, and it is has been sighted there over 200 species of birds. So it's in one of the last remaining intact wetlands in the continental United States. It's a gem. And here is a company wanting to build an asphalt factory and pollute it with all the byproducts of asphalt, plus the exhaust of over 250,000 trucks a year coming in and out of the site. And once the population heard this story, it was, you know, we rose to action and we were able to provide with a wonderful donation a lawyer's challenge to this, and everything stopped once the county saw somebody was legally going to oppose this. And so then in the interim, in the following January, we were able to rally over 3,000 petitions signed by people. And we went to hearings at the county supervisors, and we gave our sitting council then the courage to actually get stronger in their opposition to this. And that was like over 10 years ago. So people say to us, well, you lost, right? We lost the vote at the supervisors level 3-2. And we sued for various reasons in Superior Court, and we lost. And we appealed at the appellate level, and we lost. But people say, so you lost, so it's over, right? I was like, when we go out to Schoenberg, I say, do you see an asphalt factory out there? I don't. And I said, you know, as long as there's no asphalt factory, we have not lost yet. And that's when David's going to take it from here to say, where are we at now?
I got a question, though. Maybe David can actually answer this. Why are the supervisors involved with the vote versus the city of Petaluma? Yeah. So people understand that.
Yeah, this is a very good question. Yeah. And Jason, thank you for bringing this to your radio audience. The land involved along the Petaluma River, right across the river from Schoenberger Park, is outside the city's jurisdiction. It is county jurisdiction. So all planning and development approvals have to go through the county. So they went through county's Planning and Resource Management Department, and then also went through the county's Planning Commission. And from there, it went to the supervisors and back to the Planning Commission and back to the supervisors, who ultimately, on a 3-2 vote, voted to approve the project. So that's why it's a county issue, or has been a county issue. Our local supervisor, Mike Kearns, voted to approve the project. So we didn't even get support from our local supervisor. In fact, our local supervisor never even held hearings down here. It was up to Assemblyman Jared Huffman and Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey to hold the only public hearing and meeting in Petaluma. So it's one of the things that happens. Petaluma is not given a lot of weight at the County Board of Supervisors. We only have one supervisor representing this district, and we only have one vote out of five. Santa Rosa has four votes. They have four supervisors whose districts intersect with the city. So Petaluma has traditionally, historically, been on the short end of the stick on almost every issue at the Board of Supervisors. So we sued, we lost. As Joan said, we appealed, we lost. But there are not just county approvals, there are also state and federal approvals. There are other agencies who fortunately have a hand in what happens along our waterways, in the wetlands, with our air quality, with our water quality, with navigation on the river. And those approvals are all required in the approvals for the project that the supervisors and the county issued. So fortunately, until Trump dismantles the balance of environmental protections on the federal level, we still have some federal tools to work with, one of which is protection for wetlands as part of the Clean Water Act that was actually put in place under Nixon. The federal government recognized the importance of wetlands, recognized that wetlands are not just important as habitat, but also extraordinarily important because the organisms and the biochemical reactions in there really clean water, in fact, clean water more efficiently than almost anything else we can build. So given, as Joan mentioned, the national and the regional importance of these wetlands, we do have an entry point into looking at what are the impacts of building an asphalt plant in wetlands and at the edge of the Petaluma River. we have access to the federal laws on, under the Clean Act, Clean Water Act, to be able to look at what is required by those agencies and by those laws. So we have been several times looking at applications that DUCHA has made to the state agency that's responsible for implementing a portion of those federal laws. And that state agency is called the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and they're based in Oakland, and they're responsible for trying to keep and make the North Bay's waters cleaner and healthier, both for humans as well as for all the organisms that depend on clean water. DUCHA has applied for permits there and has been rejected twice.
Yeah.
As having an incomplete or inaccurate application. They've been asked for information about alternative locations. Well, this is where things get a little wonky, and if you can stay with me for about 30 seconds, I'll see if I can wrap this quickly
cool.
into a digestible ball of asphalt.
Not something you want to digest.
No, not at all.
Or ingest and try to digest.
So one of the requirements of this project at the Board of Supervisors at Sonoma County was that it be water dependent.
Right.
So DUCHA had to claim that there was no other place that could have an asphalt plant. And, in fact, the Board of Supervisors said, if it's water dependent, we will change the zoning on two of the parcels that were involved and allow you to build there. DUCHA made the case to the county that this is water dependent, that there was no other place to put it, that it was going to be delivering materials by barge, that's gravel, primarily in sand. The Regional Water Quality Control Board, on the other hand, has said, wait a second, there are asphalt plants all around the country, all around the bay, that are not on a river, that are not water dependent.
Mm-hmm.
Show us other sites, because the damages that could happen as a water dependent site are significant.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, DUCHA has failed to do that. So they were just rejected again for the second time because DUCHA didn't respond to those questions.
David, I have a question. Today in the newspaper, it said scientists' advisory office to shut. And this was the Environmental Protection Agency plans to dissolve its office of the science advisor, a Senate post that was created to the Council of the EPA administration on the scientific research on pinning health and environmental regulations, which is kind of concerning that reading this today, and now, you know, here we're having this conversation.
Yep.
And that is the biggest concern, is that the EPA is going to be making all of these changes. And then we go to the federal level, and then where do we stand?
Well, as long as these laws still exist, and fortunately Trump can and his administration of destruction can't change them willy-nilly. There are court challenges. They have to provide evidence that is satisfactory in the record to substantiate their changes of policy or law. And in many places, they have not been able to do that. So even though they are on a path of permanent destruction, so far between NGOs, non-governmental organizations, advocacy organizations, environmental organizations who have brought these to court, so far many of the changes have not happened yet. However, what Trump does have control over is gutting the agencies that enforce these laws.
Mm.
And that's what he's driving out career very experienced people who have been working for decades with their hearts and minds in the right place. And if he can get those people out, get them out of government, then they're not there to be able to craft the policies and the enforcement and the laws necessary to protect our health and our environmental health.
It seems like he's doing that with every agency, the FBI.
Exactly.
He's gutting everybody that has any institutional knowledge.
Yep.
And it's concerning.
It is.
I mean, very concerning.
It is, and you know, and every time that one of those reports comes out, we look to see is that affecting what we are capable of doing under the law for this project, as well as other projects that lots of other people are engaged with. So yeah, it's very dangerous, and hopefully we can get rid of these jerks as quickly as possible. And certainly, at least the House has to change in November. Vote. This is where the federal issues come back to your backyard or your front yard.
Well, yeah, and of course, there's a local connection as well, because we have an election coming up locally, the same day as as the other election. And we've got some candidates running, of course. We have two candidates for mayor, both of whom were on the city council when this came up. And I remember attending some of these hearings where we saw, you know, quite a few of the city council members actually showing up at the hearings and speaking up on behalf of Petaluma to get the supervisors to vote against this thing. And as far as I recall, we had one current candidate, actually, Teresa Barrett, was very vocal in her opposition, and she came to just about every hearing. Same can't be said for her opponent, unfortunately.
No, unfortunately, Mike Harris never wrote to the Board of Supervisors or to the Planning Commission at the county to voice any opposition. There was a vote by Petaluma City Council to oppose the project, but Mike Harris never showed up as an individual or wrote as an individual.
If Prop 6 is voted to upheld, this is the gas tax, it seems like there would be an argument that we're going to have the use for more asphalt in this area because of all the work that's going to be done. So I'm just curious, because, you know, people will say that. So we may as well open it up and have a conversation.
Well, that, you know, starting from 2009, that always has been Dutra's case. You know, we need asphalt, we drive, you know, we need a local source of asphalt.
We already have.
Wrong. You know, there is already, you know, in the actual official document, the environmental impact report, it stated early on there was sufficient volume of production for asphalt in Sonoma County for the next, I think it was 20 years.
There's no shortage of asphalt.
We have two companies, you know, currently supplying, and not only that, one of them has already, you know, upgraded to the new type of asphalt, which is like instead of hot mix asphalt, it's warm mix asphalt, and it is more environmentally friendly in that it uses less energy to make, and it also can be delivered in a further radius, stay fluid. So, yeah, the current applications that Dutra makes to the Regional Water Quality Control Board keep narrowing the area that the alternative sites can be looked at. You know, and I think one of their outrageous fake claims was it could only travel for 15 minutes. So we have to pay our attorneys and our environmental scientists to go through their applications, and sort of like a teacher marking a really poorly done paper, you know, they get like D minus or F, and yet the Water Control Board is very, you know, polite, and they say to them, like a nice teacher, okay, here's all the errors or omissions, and, you know, fix this, tell us why it's not economically viable for you to receive your aggregate via truck, and, you know, give us some facts. And they recently, the last thing was like, we don't have to tell you why, we just want it there. So, you know, luckily, they have been, I think one of the letters from the Regional Water Quality Board said the least environmentally destructive practical alternative is what the Clean Water Act requires when you're going to pollute a waterway or a wetland. And so they said, option 5 is what we designate you, which is no project. So they were told that it appears to them from what data was provided by the applicant that the least environmentally destructive project would be no project. So, you know, we're in a situation where we respond each time, and we call upon the community to support our attorneys and our environmental experts. And this last round, we only had about 3 days to send out the call for citizens to write in. And within 3 days, I counted 80 letters.
Oh, nice.
So the community has not given up on this. And I think that we need to reach out to all the new Petaluma residents, because mm-hmm. I meet them all the time at the playgrounds because I'm a grandma.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking to young parents. And they're new to town in the last year or two. They know nothing about an asphalt factory that's coming to the banks of the Petaluma River. And they
It's not coming. It's proposed.
Good change.
And most of them that I talk to are appalled because, you know, they'll detail to me, these are the new generation of parents. So when they decided to move to Petaluma, I've been told this several times, we did an intensive search for where we wanted to raise our family. And mm-hmm. we chose Petaluma because of the many reasons, but one of them, an environmentally healthy place to be. And they're like, what? There's going to be an asphalt factory blowing onto my new home, you know, Quarry Heights, which is less than a quarter mile from the site of the proposed asphalt factory, is building out more and more homes.
Yeah.
And we wonder whether it's disclosed to them that
they're living next to an
asphalt plant. So we're planning to do a big fundraiser as our funds are running short with all of these legal needs in the last 3 years, I guess.
How do you get all the funding? I mean, so when you need more funding, you call out and people send money in for letters?
Events sometimes.
Because, I mean, everything, you know, a letter from an attorney, it's quite expensive.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like you have a great grassroots group. And I'm assuming that you don't have big other people in back of you.
Right.
It seems like it's more of a grassroots.
Definitely grassroots. Back in 2009, we founded Friends of Schoenberger, a nonprofit under the umbrella of the OWL Foundation. And we have had generous contributions from local businesses and underwriting our various fundraising shindigs, which we've had three, I think, successful shindig big events and raised money. We have individual, you know, small businesses giving auction items, and, you know.
Camelback was involved, I remember, at one point.
Camelback was a firm supporter. You know, they've been acquired by a larger corporation now, so we don't know if we can count on them anymore. But Azure Townhomes, which their vista will be of an asphalt factory if they're right on the wetlands there. Azure has been very generous.
Makes sense.
Azumande, the bread baking company. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but individuals donate, and our website, I'll give it later, but, you know, saveschoenberger.com. We're also on Facebook, Save Schoenberger. And so stay tuned. You'll be hearing from us about upcoming events to build a coffer so we can keep fighting. I think companies like Dutra think that they can outlast the community,
mm-hmm.
but they have underestimated Petaluma because 10 years and we are still alive and kicking.
It's actually 14 years since they started their application.
My involvement, only 10 years.
Only a decade.
Yeah.
This is, you know, I've been involved in issues in Petaluma, environmental issues in Petaluma, since I got here in the end of 87. And this has been the most remarkable and generous coalition of people of any issue that I've been involved in. It's quite wonderful to see the community, and it cuts across normal political lines because it's our community, it's our health, it's our children's health, it's our recreation, it's people who use the river for rowing and boating, it's people who use Schoenberger, it's people who recognize that this is a toxic industry that does not need to be anywhere close to a community that is priding itself as being part of the bay, as being part of the wetlands.
And the Petaluma River, I mean, it is a jewel. I've been here my whole life. There was a time it was just a toxic dump practically. Mm. And, you know, and what has, you know, changed over the years, and using it for rowing, you know, you can go up north, you know, in the river now.
Mm-hmm.
And people are using it as activities. And, you know, you always talk about, you know, how do you bring more money into a community? and the river is an integral part of that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that when we expanded the trails, you know, from the Sheraton to Schollenberger and then the trails to the wastewater plant, yeah, just have a real opportunity for a community to bring in the arts and to bring in recreation. It would be great if you could have camping sites, you know, in certain areas down by the river. I mean, there's just so much more that we could do, and having Dutra there is really not a positive, and it doesn't seem as though it's something that's necessary, but I have to say, Joan, I'm very impressed. You know a lot about asphalt, and a lot more than you ever thought that you would know, and you know, when you get involved in something like this, and this one is extraordinary group, because so many people have connected with this. Mm-hmm. And that just goes to show what kind of a community we are. But a couple days ago, I called an environmental organization. I was trying to gather some information, so I was talking to this young man there, and he lives in Petaluma, and he knows so little about what's going on in Petaluma. And so we exchanged phone numbers. He's going to give me a call because he's new to the area, just like you're saying. Mm-hmm. Young people are moving here, or new families, and it's not just young people. People are retiring here. And they're really looking for that. Why did they come here? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is part of the reason why they came here, not for an asphalt plant.
Yeah, it's not for nothing.
In the wetlands, as we worked hard to make sure that that was protected during the wastewater times.
Yeah, there was absolutely, as council, Janice and myself and several others were really instrumental in making sure that we didn't build just a conventional industrial wastewater treatment plant, that in fact we took advantage of the location that we are at the top of the bay, at the top of the Petaluma Marsh, which, as Joan pointed out, some 8,000 acres remaining, is one of the largest remaining intact
wetlands.
And
that was one of the selling points to the joint ventures for purchasing that property for the wastewater plant, was that it was the most intact wetlands in the northern hemisphere.
Let me just finish this piece. You know, the location is something that is contrary to all the work that is being done by the council, by a number of local environmental groups, by Friends of Petaluma River, by others, who went, this is an incredible location. We're at this top of the marsh, which is this incredible resource, both environmentally and as for recreation and eventually for commerce. And as I was mentioning earlier, the Board of Supervisors in the county just perceives this as an old industrial area. It's why we have a three-story storage unit under construction now. Is the four-story. The Board of Supervisors has no recognition. They don't care. Our local supervisor is minimally engaged in any of this.
That
is a shame, and that's been true.
And he's running unopposed.
He's running unopposed.
So he's right. Someone in.
But one of the things that comes up is what else could be done. How can we get Dutra to go away? Obviously, we fought them on the regulatory side and the permit side and legal side now for over 10 years. And I do have to say, by the way, that David Yearsley was one of the people who tipped me off initially that this proposal was coming to the Board of Supervisors. And that's a long story with David, but his role in this was very important. But one of the things that we found along the way was, here's this access to the river that is close to 101, that is close to Petaluma Boulevard South. And we have very little access to the river other than Schollenberger and the Ellis Creek wastewater facility and the turning basin. And yet the river runs through the middle of this city. That's why the city is here.
Right.
And what if we created more access to the river on that site?
Would be great.
What if Caltrans were to decide that, in fact, they needed another rest point on 101, because the only ones within over 100 miles is Sausalito at the end of the Golden Gate Bridge and then Mendocino County. There is no rest stop along 101 between Sausalito and Mendocino County.
Good point.
What if the open space district or county parks or Trust for Public Land were to cooperate and work with us to make a proposal to build Dutra to buy them out? and have them go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need this site for production of asphalt. Obviously, they're going to continue to run into regulatory problems. We are not going to go away. But what better use for this property than to have it as a park, as an access point to the river, as a place for information, as a rest stop for 101 travelers, as an environmental entry point to the Petaluma River from the northern end of the marsh. What if that were to happen? The Open Space District and County Park.
A visitor center.
The Open Space District owes South County a lot of money. We are a donor district on that sales tax.
Good point.
Yes,
so, you know, there's options, and it's time to start exploring those in depth.
Well, makes a lot of sense. I mean, it is at the gateway of Sonoma County as well. And, you know, people always talk about not in my backyard. Well, this is our front yard.
Yeah, this is the project that, as David pointed out, opposition to this project has crossed political lines, and it also has lots of different things to hate about it. So it was fairly easy to rally opposition. Some people opposed it because it's, you know, an eyesore, you know,
right,
at the entrance to the city and the county. Some people opposed it because it would destroy, you know, pollute the wetlands. And other people opposed it because of its documented, you know, health risks. The EPA guidelines for asphalt factor is 2 to 3 miles from any residences and schools or hospitals, and this is within a quarter mile of, I think it's 24 school. It's too close to sensitive, as they call it in the scientific jargon, sensitive receptors, which means like you and me and little kids. And
what do they do with the asphalt plant Santa Rosa? That seems to be right around, you know, it's an industrial area, I believe, and a residential area.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about Bodine?
The community
there is locked in a battle with them because, you know, the community grew up around it.
Yeah. Actually, some of the homes there are quite a bit older than the asphalt plant.
Oh.
So, yeah, and, you know, at this point, it is no longer, and except you'd never build, oh, wait, this is Sonoma County. I was about to say you'd never build an asphalt plant in the middle of a residential neighborhood, but that's a battle that's ongoing in Santa Rosa.
Yeah. Well, we're really happy that you came in, both of you, David and Joan, and I understand that you actually have to leave us. You have another...
More meetings.
More meetings and things. So I think we're going to thank you for your participation in this. We're on Inside Petaluma. It's KPCA-LP 103.3. You can go to InsidePetaluma.com as well. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to continue talking about Dutra with Joan Cooper. Thank you so
All
much,
right.
David.
Thank you so much, and yay KPCA.
Yeah, thanks for coming. That was great.
Bye, David.
Bye-bye.
Well said. I learned a lot. I always learn something.
Yeah,
Okay, we're back. You're listening to Inside Petaluma. We're broadcasting on KPCALP, Petaluma, California, 103.3. You can hear us online at kpca.fm. Email address is kpca@pca.tv. And you can also go to insidepetaluma.com, where you can hear this show streaming or our previous shows. I have today, or I should say we have, my co-host Janice Cater-Thompson, myself, Jason Davies, are with Joan Cooper from Friends of Schoenberger, and we're talking Dutra. So we had David Keller with us. He had to leave, but we're going to continue on the topic, and I'll just go ahead and turn it over to Joan. I want to get us some more information on this.
Well, I think Janice wants to ask me some questions specifically.
I just wanted, there's a few things about dredging. Okay. You know, I just want to talk about the dredging because it was always said in the past, if you have more commerce on the river, that you will get more federal funding for dredging. As we know, a lot of the businesses have actually left the river, and that's one reason why we're not on a top priority.
Well, it's interesting, the idea of the river as a commercial waterway versus a recreational one, because I think my opinion is the future of the river is really a recreational one, and with the North Bay Rowing Club, with the yachts that come up to the Turning Basin, with the new Turning Basin kayak
house.
You know, recreation and is going to be the future of that river. Now, that's not to say that commerce has no part there, but in fact, the general plan for Petaluma, one of the statements was a mission to keep the Petaluma River a working river.
Mm-hmm.
And David Keller was part of that, wanting it in, which came back to bite us.
Yes, it did.
Because that phrase in the general plan was seized upon by the pro-Dutra supervisors to say, okay, well, this proposal of an asphalt factory delivering asphalt by barge, you know, meets that mission. You know, they sort of discarded other parts of the general plan, which said, do not build industrial operations in the 100-year floodplain. So they dumped that one, and they went with their hook was keep it a working river. And as David said before, that enabled them to change the zoning for a more intense operation. Before that, the plan said that area, which was part of the 39 acres, was zoned commercial, part was zoned dairy belt, part was zoned view corridor, and it enabled them to go against the general plan and change the zoning to industrial to allow this Dutra materials to have their approval. So back to the keep the river working river, it does have to be dredged for everybody, but deeply for commercial use. Mm-hmm. And so who will pay for this dredging? So federal monies have paid for the dredging.
Mm-hmm.
And Jared Huffman, when he was an assemblyman, did hold hearing, a huge town meeting, which was hundreds attended. Our then sitting Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey attended. And when they talked about, the panel was asked about dredging and where the funds would come from, Lynn Woolsey stood up and she made an astounding, a forceful statement. And she said, the river does not get dredged because there is more commercial tonnage on the river. The river got dredged because I got the funds to dredge it. And I worked really, really hard on behalf of my constituents to get that funding. And that's how the funding gets here.
Mm-hmm.
And then she looked at the Dutra representatives and she said, are you willing to dredge it for us for free? And they all, I wish I had a camera, shook their heads. No. Even though they are a dredging company, they could have said at that point, yes, we will dredge your river for free if you let us come.
I do find it interesting that they're a dredging company because
well,
that is not,
for that.
Well, no, they charge for it, but there's not a lot of discussion anymore about them bringing their dredging up here. And because all of a sudden it sounded like, oh, my God, they were going to be the dredgers, and here we go. And this is, what, 6-8 years ago or something.
Right. So that little exchange took place, and I'd love to get a clip of that from the video archives, because that's the truth of the matter. That's how funding gets here, is you have a representative who gets it for you. And unfortunately now Jared Huffman is our congressman, and he is really busy trying to save our democracy.
I mean, that's really what
you
people
know, getting funding for our river is probably not the top of
the
list.
He did say something in his recent town hall that he thinks he may be able to get the funding for dredging.
I'm so happy to hear that.
This was just in the paper.
It was just recently.
Yeah, which would be great. What you were talking about, the barge use, and that would have made it river dependent. And I remember back when this was going through different iterations that they were proposing that, but then there was an issue with the PG&E gas lines or something like that. And then it was discovered that they couldn't use the barge. I'm a little confused about this.
This speaks to the ethics of the Dutra Materials Company, as well as the county planning, as well as county supervisors, because the original proposal for the asphalt factory included a small portion of their 39 acres as riverfront, and they identified that as where their dock would go. And that is how they would bring up their materials and dock their barges there. Mm-hmm. Now, anybody who can read a map, including the planning department, could see that there was a PG&E high-pressure pipe that ran directly into that parcel.
Yeah, there's even a sign. I've seen that sign
there's
before.
There's two billboards, you know, with fading paint, that, and I have taken photos of this, that say, no mooring, no dredging.
Right.
PG&E, you know, high pressure. Now, everybody knew that was there. Dutra knew it when they bought the property, and the Planning Commission knew it when they looked at the maps, and the supervisors knew it when they approved the project. That there could never be a dock there.
Well, didn't they play the game that we're going to go all of a sudden have a conveyor belt,
yes,
and we're going to go ahead and use Shamrock, but then Shamrock is not part of that?
They only did that when community member David Keller took a look at their proposal. Dutra sent a request to the Coast Guard to kind of seek from the Coast Guard a letter of approval and endorsement. And with this request, they sent mapping of the area. Well, in this mapping, not only did they fail to identify these pipes, but they also changed the width of the river. So they redrew the depth of the river so that the width of the river would accommodate their barges, because this is a federally navigable channel, and it cannot be blocked. So if you moor, these barges are 200 feet long and I think 50 feet wide.
Pretty big.
And there is a possibility that... I'm getting a little mixed up. So first, once it was revealed that these maps had been falsified, then they stopped the whole process. And then 6 months later, they came back with, okay, we won't try to have a dock where we first said, we're going to use Shamrock's dock.
Right.
But then Shamrock went to court and said, we have no intention of providing our dock.
Well, that's my understanding.
And that's on the, public record. And so the supervisors, in all their wisdom, eventually approved this project with the caveat that Shamrock, Dutra had 3 years to basically get access to Shamrock's dock. Mm-hmm. And during those 3 years of operation, they could use trucks to bring in the aggregate.
Sure.
They could build their factory, they could use trucks. But in 3 years, they had to have dock access. So when we did go to court, I remember our attorney asking the judge, and if this project is allowed to go forward and the factory is built and they do not get permission from Shamrock to use their dock, will you require them to dismantle their factory and stop operation? And the judge said, oh, no, that's up to the county.
That never happens.
You
never go backwards.
So we all know.
That's why
up
you've got to be careful at the beginning.
So there you have it. So it's like the, it's like a con game. They tried to con.
It's like a shell game.
It's like a shell game, like a con game. Yeah. And this is why we said that Dutra will not be, you know, a good neighbor. Because their history, I don't really want to go into their, you know, terrible history.
Public
record. Right.
Environmental degradation, you know, they, you know, destroyed, you know, environmentally protected areas in the Miami, port of Miami. They dumped in the Farallon Islands in protected areas. You know, companies like this consider fines just a cost of doing business. So if you're living, you know, people say they malign the idea of not in your backyard. But we have to protect our backyard and our front yard because companies like these, you know, we asked the fire chief at the time of Petaluma, what would happen if there was a fire at this asphalt factory? How would you respond? And, you know, basically what he said is we would call in the other areas, but the method of responding to asphalt factories is to let them burn out. In other words, there is a source of fuel there. All of the gunk oil that goes, one of the ingredients of asphalt, like the worst of the oil, is what oil, sand, aggregate. I know a lot about this now. So what they do with asphalt factories is you shelter in place. So Petaluma residents, do you want to go hide in your homes and close all your windows and wait till an asphalt factory burns out?
You know, one of the things I recall from some of the, I would call it propaganda coming from the Dutra proponents, had to do with this contention that, well, we have this plant before in Petaluma and no one ever complained, we never had any issues, but my understanding is that it was shut down because it was operating without a permit. And they were actually exceeding some of the standards in terms of air quality.
Right. This, you know, this is the long sorted history of Dutra's misrepresentation of facts. So they maintained, as Jason says, that they were just replacing an existing factory.
And that they were good neighbors.
That they were good neighbors. So, you know, Janice is going to tell us a little bit about the history of this whole area, but there was a small asphalt production facility up on the hill. What is it called? The Heinz factory or something like that. And it was up there. And so that piece of land was closed down and became Quarry Heights, which is the new build out of. And that's why it's called Quarry Heights. There was a quarry, and there was a little asphalt production thing. But Dutra, actually, they didn't run that. They had a temporary asphalt factory, tiny, downstream, well, you'd call it upstream, from the, not on the 39 acres, not on the proposed site.
Right.
And that operated for a while. And during that time, they had, I think, six complaints about dark smoke, you know, and odor emanating from
it.
And the Bay Area Air Quality sent their people down to investigate, and they shut them down.
Right.
Now, the reason that was so noxious is because they were also experimenting with rubberized asphalt.
I remember smell. It was not pleasant.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, in this age of high technology and everything, the way the Bay Area air quality comes and explores what's going on, there's like a card, you can print this off the internet, which shows squares with different shadings, you know, from pure white to black, and then tones, and they hold it up to the sky to see how dirty the air looks. Anyway, it didn't pass that test, and they got cited, and then they were operating without a permit, or it had expired, and then that was closed down. So that had been shut down several years before the proposal for the new asphalt factory was made. And so the reason that it's key is that in their environmental evaluation of how much pollution would this add to our Bay Area air, because it's an average of Bay Area, they wanted to, you get a free pass, get this, if you're in business. You get a free pass for the amount of pollution you are already creating. So that's
so
okay.
So it's just what's added
so
on.
So they subtract that from the new production, you know, estimate of, okay, they want to produce how many tons, 200,000 tons, I don't remember, of asphalt per year, and it will calculate it X amount of NOx and pollution and whatever. Then you subtract out what you're already doing. That doesn't count. And so you have a lower number that's then evaluated with will it pass for standards. So they did that. They used this old non-operating on a different piece of land and said, this was our old asphalt. We're only replacing it. Okay.
Oh.
So that actually was one of our points in our lawsuit that we took to the appellate court, because there is a legal standing that says that if it's a new piece of land, then the baseline is zero. You cannot, the baseline of pollution is zero. You can, and this principle of how you calculate pollution was tried in court and won and put into the, you know, rules by our own attorney, Richard Drury.
Wow.
So we were sure we were going to win on this but what we found out is that when I asked Richard after we lost, I said, how could they not, you know, rule on that? It's clear this is not the same piece of ground.
Right.
And he said that appellate judges are very loath to reverse local elected officials' decisions.
Yeah.
They do not like to do that unless it's really, 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 they can't avoid it. And so, which gets back to what Jason was talking about before, how important it is to elect local officials who will protect the health of your family and your environment.
And also knowing what their history is.
You know,
just really need to know.
I'll make a point, too, because I've had this point. I've been public about it, and I've talked to him directly about it. I asked David Rabbit when he was on the council if he was going to go speak on behalf of Petaluma against this plant, because, you know, our council all signed on to the letter, but there were three conspicuously absent council members that never appeared at a single hearing. And you could see a lot of their supporters in those hearings that were pro-Dutra, so maybe there's a connection there. But I asked him, I asked David Rabbit, this was when he was running for supervisor, if he would attend any of the hearings, because he said he was against the project. And what he told me...
Excuse me, let me interrupt. I also spoke to him. He always was very careful to say, I'm against the project in its current form.
That's correct. So what he told me was that he would think about it. And then when I asked him, because it was getting closer, because, I mean, where I was coming from is I thought, look, okay, Kearns voted for this thing. He's our supervisor. But we have a united council that has signed on an opposition letter to this. If we all show up, you know, and are in the supervisor's faces... maybe that will resonate. That was what I thought. And four other council members took that view, but three didn't. And anyway, what David told me, this was David Rabbit, was that he wouldn't go because he thought it was a potential Brown Act violation. Well, of course, it's a public meeting, and it wouldn't be a Brown Act violation.
He told me he was very busy with many other meetings.
Yeah.
It was his schedule.
So it does bring the point is that it's extremely important to hold our elected officials accountable and to make sure that, you know, when you're voting, you look at the endorsements, you look if the environment's important to you, look at the candidates that have environmental endorsements, for example. Anyway, our time is over. We got to sign out. I want to thank you, Joan, so much. Friends of Schoellenberger Park, people can go to the website.
Yes, thanks for giving me the opportunity to tell people, you know, where we're at now. We're still fighting. They still haven't gotten their 404 and their 401 Clean Water Act permits. We can still win, and if you want to support this, and protect Schoellenberger Park and your air quality and your children, go to saveschoellenberger.com, and there's a donate button. You can donate, and it's tax deductible.
That's great.
You know, and I think the great part of the conversation was really about the river and how important it is for commerce in this town, or just the community in general.
And there's a quote in the article that was in the Press Democrat. In the Bay Area, 90% of the wetlands have been destroyed by development. So it's that was David Keller. So it's really important to protect our wetlands. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us today. You've been listening to Inside Petaluma on KPCALP 103.3 FM. We are going to say goodbye for today, and we have another program coming that you guys are all going to love. So go ahead and listen in on that. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next Friday, or you'll hear us next Friday.
Thanks, Jason. Bye-bye. Thanks, Joan.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Joan.
Oh, you did? David Glass is awesome. Thank you.